Maine CDC Director Nirav Shah with the latest on the COVID pandemic in Maine. There is hopeful news this week. For the second day in a row, the Maine CDC has not reported any new deaths linked to COVID-19. And today, the number of new cases reported was less than 100. That number is down dramatically from mid-January, where cases peaked at more than 600 per day. Meantime, more and more people have received at least one dose of the vaccine, nearly 300,000. But there remain a lot of questions and confusion over vaccine distribution, how people are prioritized, and how they are contacted when it's their turn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we welcome back the head of the state's CDC, Dr. Nirav Shah, to answer your questions about COVID-19 in Maine. Maine Calling is next. But first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Cases of COVID-19 are declining in Maine, and about 1 in 7 Mainers have now received at least one dose of a vaccination. But the pandemic continues to cause concern and confusion. Here to answer your questions today, Dr. Nirav Shah, who is director of Maine's Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Hi, Dr. Shah. Thank you so much for coming back to Maine Calling.
Good morning, Jennifer and everyone. It's a pleasure to be back on.
If you have a question for Dr. Shah, our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Shah, good news today. For the second day in a row, no COVID deaths to report from the Maine CDC. Fewer cases than there were just a month ago. Do you feel the sense of optimism and relief that so many others are feeling right now?
I do feel that sense of optimism and relief. Overall, there are a lot of positive signs on the horizon. If you compare where we are today just against the last time I joined everyone on your program, which was on January 28th, that was a day when we had almost 300 new cases that day. Today we have 97, still a lot. On that day, we had 177 Maine people in the hospital. Today it's 72, still a lot, but fewer than what it was before. Back even on that day in January, there were 31 people on a ventilator. Today, it's 6. That's still 6 lives that are in precarious situations, but not the 31 where it was a month ago. So there are positive signs on the horizon. There are also concerning signs on the horizon. Back then, we had not yet identified any instances of any of the new variants of the coronavirus in Maine. Today, we have 2, and there are probably more that will be identified as we continue to look for them. But we're making progress on vaccinations as well. Since I last spoke with everybody back on January 28th, we have now administered more than 170,000 shots since that time alone. As of right now, it's just under 300,000 shots that we have put out into people's arms across the state of Maine. 200,000 people have gotten their first dose. Almost 100,000 have gotten both doses. So there are signs of optimism on the horizon, but all of this, again, comes against a very sad set of backdrops. Nationwide, we've hit over 500,000 deaths associated with COVID-19, so we always keep those deaths on our minds.
Is the supply from the vaccines coming from the federal government increasing now that the Biden administration is trying to move faster on pandemic response?
It is increasing. There are a number of things that are driving that. Number one is increasing volumes of the 2 existing vaccines that we have, but one by Pfizer, one by Moderna, where in recent weeks, the volume that we get into our state every week has inched upward reliably for the past several weeks. That's been positive. The other positive sign on the horizon there, too, is the possibility that yet another vaccine may be authorized as early as this upcoming weekend. This is a vaccine candidate made by Johnson & Johnson. The FDA, the U.S. FDA, is meeting to convene to review the evidence around that vaccine later this week, and an expert panel from the U.S. CDC will consider some of the best clinical uses for that vaccine. That, too, if authorized, will also help increase the supply of vaccine. Right now, even though the numbers of vaccinated folks are going up, supply remains our number one constraint. Bottom line, supply is what governs speed right now.
People who are receiving vaccines in Maine, Dr. Shaw, where are they receiving them? Are these large-scale vaccination sites up and running now and seeing a lot of patients? Are people still primarily receiving their vaccine through their doctor's office? And is it only the doctors who are affiliated with one of the big organizations?
It's a mixture across the state. Let's just kind of first note the numbers, though. As of this morning, over 103,000 Maine people who are just 70 and over have received at least their first shot. That's more than half of the total composition of people Maine 70 and over across the state. We're hoping to keep pushing with that. What we know right now is that folks are receiving vaccines across the state from a number of different channels. One of the channels that has helped us get to where we are, being one of the top performing states on vaccines, has been the presence of these large-scale public-facing vaccination sites. There's one down in Scarborough. There's one in Bangor. There's one here in Augusta. And we're working to open up more and more of them in the coming week, ideally. That has been one place for a large volume of Maine people to get their shots. The benefit of those spots is that they can utilize a lot of vaccine in a short period of time with very, very little waste and very high efficiency. I recently spent some time at the site in Bangor at the Cross Insurance Center, and they were able to get folks from entrance to exit in around 20 minutes, maybe 21 minutes. So there's a lot of benefits for that. But that's not the only place. Other Maine people are getting vaccinated at hospitals. A number of hospitals in Maine have vaccine or vaccination sites associated with their facilities. We've also worked with commercial chain pharmacies, whether it's, for example, Walmart in the state is offering vaccines at all of their locations that have pharmacies.
What is the status of the vaccine sign-up site that the Maine CDC has been working on, the website?
We are still working to stand something up. We are going to couple that with a call center. We hope to have something up very, very soon. It's one of the top priorities within the agency right now. The question on the table is to what extent that site how it will interact with the other sites that are already up and running. For example, the sites that are helping folks get registered at these larger scale sites in Bangor and Scarborough. We don't necessarily want to disturb the platforms that those organizations have stood up because they're working well. And sometimes in the IT world, as I imagine everyone can appreciate, something that works well, one of the worst things you can do is to disturb something that's working really well. So we're not sure whether there will then be one site or whether there will be different sites depending on where you'd like to go and one large organizational place where we list all of them. And depending on where you'd like to be vaccinated, you can click from there. We're trying to sort that out right now, though.
I'm going to go to questions from the audience because we're already seeing so many, and some are related, many about these new virus variants that we're hearing about, Dr. Shaw. And I'll go to an email from David. He writes, Dr. Michael Osterholm, renowned epidemiologist, a member of the Biden Transition Task Force, said on Friday that he is scared that the number of variants of the COVID-19 virus and the speed with which they are appearing is getting ahead of efforts to vaccinate and contain. He's terrified that relaxing protocols prematurely will result in spikes of number of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths in the coming weeks and months unless strong measures are taken now. Is he right?
Well, it's impossible to predict the future, as we've seen with the pandemic. Here is the reason to be concerned and then the reason to be optimistic. The reason to be concerned is as follows. These new variants, including the one that we've identified here in Maine, are more contagious, and as a result of being more contagious, are thought to infect more people. They also not just infect more people, but on an individual person clinical level, they may actually be more pathogenic. They may result in more severe disease and thus more hospitalizations and thus even more deaths. Because they spread more and because they are more aggressive, that's a reason for concern. So right off the bat, I think anyone involved with public health, their antenna go way up when we start talking about these new variants. but it's not a reason for universal loss of hope. Indeed, one of the variants, the variant that has been found in Maine, was first characterized in the UK in late December, or mid-December, where it was in part responsible for a remarkable increase in cases in the UK. But the UK, following an aggressive vaccination schedule, similar to the efforts that we've been trying to put out in Maine, the UK was able to vaccinate very aggressively, as well as put into place sensible public health measures, like restrictions on gathering, things of that nature. And if you take a look at the case counts in the UK, they have not continued to go up, 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 and up, but they have, in fact, peaked downward, or they have trended downward, much as the cases in the United States have gone. So what that tells me is that being overrun by the new variants is not inevitable. We can outrun them through aggressive vaccination as well as keeping up with common sense public health measures.
I'm going to go to John. John is calling from Falmouth. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Good morning. This is John. I'm a pediatrician in Falmouth. I want to, number one, congratulate you on the elegant partnership and impressive results that you and the government of Maine have been able to accomplish. My question is travel and quarantine requirements. CDC federal states that if you've been vaccinated and you're in that window 2 weeks post-vaccination, up to 90 days post-vaccination, you should be able to travel without having to quarantine. The state of Vermont is going to make that go into effect with that tomorrow, I believe, and wondering where Maine stands on this.
Great question, John, and thank you for your kind words as well. So here's the bottom line. There are two interrelated issues in what you noted. The first is, what are the implications of just being vaccinated, fully vaccinated against COVID? By fully, I mean at least 10, 14 days, in fact, after you've gotten your second dose. And several weeks ago, Maine CDC issued guidance saying, if you've been fully vaccinated against COVID-19, and you happen to encounter somebody and become a close contact of someone who later goes on or finds out that they have COVID, the vaccine is so exquisitely good that you do not need to go into the normal 10-day quarantine you would have otherwise needed to go into had you not been vaccinated. That's how good this vaccine is. And we felt actually comfortable, based on our review of the data, making that move even before the US CDC did. They caught up with us a week or two after that. Now, you ask a related question, which is, what are the implications of being vaccinated on travel? There, things become a little bit more interesting, because when we're talking about folks who are coming into our state from another part of the country, it's all well and good to say, yes, they may not need to quarantine, they may not need to be tested, but it becomes a challenge around really truly understanding who that's coming into Maine has actually been fully vaccinated. So that's what we're thinking about right now. Maybe we require them to show proof of their vaccination status. That's an option. I don't know that the governor has fully decided it yet, but within the boundaries, within the borders of Maine, if someone is fully vaccinated and they encounter somebody who has COVID, they don't need to go into quarantine after that. But again, the implications on the travel piece, particularly as all of us are looking forward to resuming our spring and summer travel events, that's something that's top of mind. We're evaluating some of the approaches of other states, but I don't think we've made a final decision yet.
All right. We're going to go to an email. Thank you, John, so much for your question. Email here from Carolyn. My parents are in their 70s and have said they will not get the COVID vaccine. I'm upset because I think they are basing their decision on opinion-based internet research as opposed to speaking with their primary care doctors and trusting public health experts. Aside from encouraging them to speak with their doctors, do you have any advice for how I can convince them that the vaccine is safe?
Well, I hear that question. I've certainly had interactions with parents of friends of mine, as well as family members who are in your parents' same age category, who have expressed skepticism, if not outright hostility to the vaccine. The question I've asked them two questions. The first is, do you feel safe right now? And if the answer is that you do feel safe right now, then, well, convincing anybody to do anything if they already feel safe is a big challenge. But The second question I ask that I couple that with is, what specifically are your reservations? Do you feel that the vaccine is not safe enough? The data don't seem to bear that out. The vaccine, having now been administered in millions of people, seems to have vanishingly few side effects. Do you not feel that the vaccine is effective enough? Are you waiting for something better? That, too, seems not quite right. The vaccine is, the two that we have right now are stunningly effective. If anything, we're underselling the efficacy of the vaccine. So I think asking the reasons for their hesitancy are really, really important. But those are the two questions that I ask. It's recognizing that it's very difficult to prompt anyone to do something that they inveterately don't want to do. But I think asking why and whether they are satisfied with the status quo is the right place to start. Recognizing that being vaccinated, being fully vaccinated, opens up doors, as I mentioned just a moment ago in connection with John's question. Among the numerous benefits of being fully vaccinated are the fact that if you happen to encounter somebody who has COVID, your likelihood of getting infected is in fact so low that we don't even ask you to be in quarantine. So this is a game changer for many of the folks that I know who are in the 70 and older bracket who have been waiting inside for the better part of a year. This is their ticket out.
All right. So thank you so much for that question. I want to go to a question here from Angel. There are several that are similar, asking about Walmart and scheduling appointments at Walmart. Angel asks, why can't someone like me with underlying conditions get the vaccine same as you recommend with people 70 years of age or older? I had an appointment here in Presque Isle at Walmart with my doctor's medical notes to bring with me. I got a call from Walmart saying they had to cancel my appointment and my husband's appointment, saying they had a call from the CDC saying they need to take 70 years old and up.
Well, Angel, I hear your question, and I want to give you a complete answer. Right now, the folks who are receiving the vaccine are either folks who are healthcare providers, folks who live in congregate living settings like nursing homes, or those who are age 70 and older. As of right now, having any of various or different medical conditions is not a qualification for being vaccinated. Now, I know that's not the news you wanted to hear. And so you might ask, why is that? Well, one of the reasons why Governor Mills chose the approach that we have in place right now is that individuals who are 70 and older have a significantly elevated risk of death or severe disease associated with COVID, a risk that is so high that it came before almost every other medical condition. Not all, but almost all. That's why Governor Mills chose to focus on those main people who are 70 and older, to protect them and lower their risk of getting severe illness associated with COVID. Now, there's an open question about where we go from here. Do we start thinking about those who do have certain medical conditions? If so, which ones? Which are the ones that put folks at the highest risk of death? Do we think about those who are frontline healthcare workers in some way? Or do we just think about it in terms of age going forward? No matter which pathway we choose, there will be a lot of folks who are disappointed. The governor has mentioned on several different occasions that her organizing principle for how we think about vaccines is about the risk of death or severe disease. And that's why she started with those 70 and older, not so much those who have, say, certain medical conditions. I know that's not the news you wanted to hear, but that is how we are going about this. And we are hoping that as more vaccine comes into our state, we can throw open the doors even more.
We are speaking with Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah. More of your questions and comments when we come back. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from CEI, helping Maine's small business owners navigate challenging times. Learn more at ceimaine.org. By Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine insulation rebates and loans. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And New England Cancer Specialists, committed to helping patients achieve their best outcome. Proud member of the Dana-Farber Cancer Care Collaborative.
This Week in This American Life, one of our producers here at the show, Susan Burton, recently revealed a secret that she had kept to herself for decades from everybody in her life. And I do mean everybody. Nobody knew at all. Not her family, not a single friend, nobody. And it got her thinking about secrets. Why we finally tell them, if we do finally tell them. Stories she found in other people's lives, all about that, this week.
You can hear that tonight at 11 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. The PBS NewsHour on Maine Public Television provides in-depth news and analysis on the issues that matter to you. It can be seen weekday evenings at 6, 7, and 11. The NewsHour brings you the top stories objectively examined and discussed in depth with differing viewpoints. It's television news you can trust, helping make sense of our complicated and ever-changing world. The PBS NewsHour at 6, 7, and 11, weeknights on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine CDC Director Nirav Shah joins us today to discuss COVID vaccines, testing, the virus variants, and more. Share your questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. A question from Teresa on Facebook. Dr. Shah, with the state and national push to have students back in school, why aren't teachers being prioritized for the vaccine? At this rate, the school year will be over by the time I qualify to get vaccinated.
Well, it's a fair question. It's one that we've thought through and have talked with even including teachers about. I think the place to start with is where we wrapped up with our prior question right before the break, which is to first make sure we're thinking about it in terms of risk. According to the U.S. CDC and their CDC director, Dr. Walensky, although we all recognize that opening schools is really important, Dr. Walensky herself has indicated that vaccinating teachers should not be seen as a prerequisite to opening schools. Although we recognize the work that teachers are doing, the learned opinion of the U.S. CDC has been that schools can open and be open safely even when teachers have not yet been vaccinated. That has been the experience that we've had in Maine. Even though the schools and opening them and keeping them open is a significant challenge, school administrators, educators across the state have been able to have kids be in the classroom throughout the school year thus far without those classrooms becoming significant places of COVID transmission. So that's one place where we start, which is, do we need to vaccinate teachers in order to keep schools open? And according to the U.S. CDC, the answer right now for where we are in the pandemic is no. The related inquiry is then going to risk. We are still in a situation where the volume of vaccine that's coming into the state is extremely limited. We're getting on the order of about 27,000 first doses every single week, and we have 1.3 million people to vaccinate. That means we've got a really tough choice. For a single dose that comes in the state, is the best use of that dose in someone who's 75 years of age, who might be at significantly higher risk for severe disease or death, or is it in somebody else? That's the question that we have to face every single day. There is not an easy answer to that, as you can imagine, but until we get more supply of vaccine, the way the governor has been thinking about this, up until today at least, is that those who are at the highest risk of death should be those who we are vaccinating first. If the supply of vaccine increases, then we can revisit not just vaccinating teachers, but a number of others as well.
An email here from Kathleen, which is related. She says, the vaccine will be available to me fairly soon due to my age. There are many of us, altruistically inclined older people, who can easily self-isolate, who do not have comorbidity issues, and who are generally safe, who would like to forestall our doses to those who are truly in need. Call it seniors for teachers, seniors for immigrants, seniors for those in multi-generational housing situations, seniors for the incarcerated. I would love it if there was a wait list, if you will, for those of us who would like to sign up to donate our turn at bat to those who are genuinely in need right now.
what a lovely email. I mean, I appreciate everything that that underlies the spirit of that email, because you're right. There may be some folks who can successfully stay inside just a bit longer and give their spot in line to somebody who may be out there on the front lines. But we've seen a couple of things with respect to the pandemic. The first is that none of us is truly an island. Even folks who thought they were cordoned off from others ended up getting infected through various or different ways. With a new variant on the horizon, a variant that is more contagious and potentially more deadly, that ability to stay safe inside becomes even harder and harder to do. And so while I so much appreciate the altruism that underlies the spirit of that email, I would recommend that when the vaccine is available for your age group, you go ahead and get vaccinated. That's one of the surest things that you can do today to not just keep yourself safe, but also start slowing the pandemic overall. I would not wait. Again, I respect and applaud the notion, the spirit behind it, but I would not wait.
I'll go to Peter calling from Castine. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Shaw, I just want to first say thank you for everything you've done. I hope you've got a vacation in your future, because it feels to me like it's much deserved. My question is related to educators as well. I work in a small university, and just curious to know, I feel like every couple of weeks I go back and read the main guidance on vaccination schedules to see if it's going to be my turn, and curious to know if the focus on educators is going to be more on K-12 or if it will include university settings as well.
Peter, thanks for that question. As we've been thinking about it, it's both. Now, I don't mean to suggest that those are equivalent, but as we've been thinking about where educators of all stripes, we are considering the needs of both K-12, primary and secondary, as well as post-secondary collegiate level folks. Now, that, thankfully, the same analysis largely applies, which is to say that whether you are contending with a room of first or second graders or a room of freshmen and sophomores in college, education in the classroom setting has been able to be pulled off relatively safely, certainly compared to what we've seen in some other states. Indeed, the last time that we ran the numbers here in Maine, which was 4 or 5 days ago, the risk of having COVID associated with the classroom was lower than the risk of just getting COVID in the general population. So we think that classroom education can be done in a safe manner and in a manner that reduces the risk for both students as well as teachers. And that's one reason we're thinking about them in the manner that we are right now.
Dr. Shaw, that's so counterintuitive. Is there thinking about the reason why? Is it because perhaps mask mandates are more broadly enforced?
Yep. I'm glad you raised that, Jennifer, because this finding is not an accident. It's not just an incidental thing where we all said, gee whiz, didn't think that was going to happen. It's in fact the opposite. This is a finding that is the result of deliberate planning, processing, and implementation. Like you said, schools have been assiduous at making sure that teachers and students are maintaining as much physical distance as possible, introducing as much ventilation as possible, and then perhaps most critically, being really scrupulous about wearing masks at all time. It's really the masking that is doing a lot of that work. And so this is an opportunity to recognize that even during a pandemic, where many of us back in July and August were unsure of last year, were unsure about what the relative safety of the classroom would be, there were concerns that they could be founts for transmission and outbreaks. We have seen cases associated with schools. We've even seen some transmission within schools, but they have not been the centerpieces of outbreaks and transmission that many of us were concerned about back in July and August. That's not an accident. That is because of the dedication of teachers, faculty members, educators, and staff across the state.
Peter, thanks for your question. Going to an email here from Gail. Gail asks, I am seeing more and more articles where scientists are starting to say that those who have had COVID-19 only need one vaccine shot. Would Dr. Shaw talk about what he thinks are possibilities that the CDC will examine this and what sort of timeline for a decision would he expect?
Well, that has been a question that has come up since the early days of the analysis around the Moderna vaccine, when, as part of their submission to the U.S. FDA, the manufacturer Moderna included this intriguing graph in their very, very dense submission to the FDA, which suggested a benefit to the vaccine after just one dose, and that raised everyone's antenna, with folks starting to say, huh, maybe this is a strategy that's worth evaluating. In recent days, there have been more articles and analyses that have been undertaken about the benefit of just one dose. What does one dose get you versus two doses? And here's what we know, what at least the early data suggest. The early data for both vaccines suggests that there is a benefit to being just receiving one dose, and that benefit can start as soon as a week or two after that first dose. That's a real thing, and that's not something to be discounted. The open question is how long that benefit lasts for. Is it as durable? And if it's not as durable, how long can you stretch it between the first dose and the second dose? Right now, those two have to be given within 3 to 4 weeks. How much further than that is it reasonable to stretch it without losing some of the benefit from the first dose? That's a very difficult question to answer, and I believe that's what folks are thinking about right now. I understand that there are groups like the U.S. FDA and the U.S. CDC that are thinking about this a lot more deeply to try to figure out whether this should precipitate a change in the U.S.-based strategy. I will say, however, that as recently as yesterday, Dr. Fauci himself did not endorse this strategy. And this is someone who's perhaps more steeped in the latest data than just about anybody else. And his very, very educated opinion on this was that at this time, with the data that he has seen, it was not worth it to delay the second dose. His concern is primarily around how long the benefit of the first dose lasts, and if it starts to wane, whether we might see other unintended consequences, for example, the generation of some of these new variants. That's something that Dr. Fauci said yesterday. I don't think we've heard the final analysis on this question, and I suspect that as we learn more about the science, we'll learn more and more things that might change our strategy here in the U.S.
All right, we're going to go to Jane, who's calling from Sweden. Hi, Jane, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I am 84 years old, and I have tried numerous sites, Central Maine Medical, Maine CDC, Seniors Plus, St. Mary's, a recent site that's supposed to be open in Bridgeton. I cannot get an appointment.
Well, you know, Jane, I hear where you're coming from. We've heard the very same from a number of folks who have found it really challenging to find a spot and figure out where to go, when, and how to get there. What I would ask or recommend is not going to be what you probably wanted to hear, but that is to keep trying. As more and more vaccine comes into the state, more and more appointments are being opened up across the state. And so please don't give up hope. I know that that's not what you wanted to hear. I suspect you wanted to know that there was a place you could go immediately that would have an open spot. And there may in fact be, but as more vaccine gets delivered, more spots are opened up, and as more spots are opened up, it becomes easier and easier for folks to get a vaccine. In your neck of the woods, you're a bit away from some of the larger scale sites in Scarborough and Portland, both of which have a little bit more availability than some of the smaller ones. But my ask is that you not give up and that you keep trying. If you've got a family member or someone else who can help you break through some of those walls, that would be the best way to go about it. I'm sorry to hear that, though. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Dr. Shaw, is there any advice about best day of the week to call or best time of the day?
It really does vary by location. Each of the locations open up new appointment slots on a slightly different schedule. So there isn't necessarily best day or a best time to call. One of the benefits of these larger scale sites is that they have so much vaccine coming in that they are able to open up appointments in blocks of several hundred. But one of the negatives of them, one of the downsides of them, is that they do require folks sometimes to travel at long distances. We're well aware of that trade-off. That's one reason why, as vaccine supply starts to open up and become more plentiful, we can then set up more and more of maybe smaller scale sites so that folks don't have to travel so far.
Jane, good luck to you. I hope you're able to receive your vaccination soon. I'm going to go to a tweet here. Perhaps you might speak to the restriction you have placed on no spectators at middle and high school sports. Why can't one parent attend masked at socially distanced? Some gyms or arenas can hold 800 plus people, asking for many parents.
Mm-hmm. This is a question that we've seen and that has come up. The bottom line is that, as with anything, it's very much in flux right now. As case numbers come down, this could be something that we revisit. The concern all along, though, has been that groups of people who are congregating and potentially cheering on their kids, potentially thus introducing a virus into a closed space, that could be a situation that leads to an outbreak. There have been outbreaks of that sort that have been detected earlier in the pandemic, in the fall. But as things improve, that could be one of the things that gets changed. But the concern around it is the possibility for introducing outbreaks, as it has been with anything around large gatherings. Every gathering has slightly different nuances, and so no two gatherings are the same. But when you think about a situation where folks may be in a closed space, ventilation may not be adequate in many of those, and they're cheering, you do have the possibility of opening up an outbreak.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. We're speaking with Dr. Nirav Shah, head of the Maine CDC. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Community Foundation, saluting frontline workers, nonprofit organizations, and donors for their strength and support, and Springtide Seaweed, dedicated to offering Maine organically farmed seaweed. Learn more at springtideseaweed.com.
I'm Peter O'Dowd.
Anchor swimmer for the USA is Dara Torres.
Dara Torres is one of the most decorated swimmers in Olympic history, but the pressure to perform and look a certain way led her to a severe eating disorder. She'll talk about that struggle in a new documentary, and we'll talk with her next time on Here and Now.
That's coming up shortly from 12 noon until 2 here on Maine Public Radio. Did you know, in addition to being free over the air, Maine Public Television is now streaming live at mainepublic.org? You can enjoy all of your favorite PBS and Maine Public Television programs and even discover new ones throughout the day. Check it out at mainepublic.org/MPTV. If you're without internet, you can still access Maine Public's 4 television stations over the air with an HDTV antenna. To learn more about Maine Public Television over the air and for helpful information on choosing your antenna, visit mainepublic.org. Free access to Maine Public Television is made possible through the support of our members. Consider becoming a member today to help us deliver this wonderful service to all of Maine. Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. My guest today, Dr. Nirav Shah, director of the Maine CDC. He is here to talk about vaccinations, COVID testing, masks, and to answer your questions. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, if you're quick, to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. An email from Wayne: do vaccination sites have a list of unvaccinated people in the local community that vaccinators can call if there is extra vaccine available at the end of the day?
So generally speaking, they have not needed to do so. Some of them may in fact have such a list, but one of the benefits of the larger scale sites is that they are able to meter out the number of doses as they get toward the end of the day, so that when they identify the last person in line, they are just drawing up enough vaccine to run out, in quotes, for that very, very last person. Indeed, as I was speaking with the operator of one of the large sites, at the end of a day where they had vaccinated over 1,500 people, they only had one shot left at the end of the day. And within a couple of seconds, they were able to go to the waiting area and find somebody who was also 70 years older and older, who was already scheduled for a week or two in advance. And they were able to say, actually, sir or ma'am, why don't you just come in and get your shot now? That's one of the benefits of these sites. And as a result, there hasn't been a need to have a very long list ready to go at the end of the day. Some sites may do so if they don't have the ability to meter out doses as much. And that is definitely what we recommend. We recommend that if you feel like you're looking at the end of the day and you may have a certain number of doses left over in a vial, 3, 4, or 5 doses, you start calling people who are 70 and older to say, hey, can you come in today, especially if they're folks who have already signaled their willingness to be vaccinated.
All right. We'll go to Carol calling from Cumberland. Hi, Carol. Go ahead. You're on Maine calling with Dr.
Shaw. Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. First of all, Dr. Shaw, you do just a brilliant job, and I just want to compliment you on that. I'm so impressed. I don't know of another state, not that I would, but that is doing as well as we are here. Second of all, love the candy bar that Wilbur's has put out with your picture on it. Delicious. The other thing is I did get my first vaccine shot last Thursday. I went down to Scarborough to the Maine Health facility there. It was wonderful. Making an appointment was quite easy. The call center was wonderful, and they are absolutely right on top of it. Plenty of help to help. I'm visually impaired, so just wonderful. Took about, I think, for the shot, totally 20 minutes, and then there's a 15-minute wait, hold afterwards. But just it was fine. So well done, and keep it up.
Carol, thanks for your report from the front lines. Go ahead, Dr. Shaw.
Carol, that everything you've said just warms my heart. I'm very grateful. Thank you for your praise. I would be remiss if I didn't let folks know that I'm just a guy who gets to talk about the work that's happening. The truth of the matter is that we are where we are as a state, whether it's around testing, contact tracing, the safety of schools, all of those issues, now vaccination, because of the work of thousands of people within state government, at hospitals and schools. They are the ones that are really out there doing all the work that allows me to trumpet the good work that's being done. So I owe them a thanks. And Carol, I'm so glad that your experience at Scarborough Downs was favorable. Indeed, our colleagues at Maine Health have been planning to launch that site. And indeed, when they did, it has proven to be the type of places that Maine will need to keep vaccinating folks. Vaccination is going to be our key out. It's going to be our key toward resuming some degree of normalcy that we all crave right now. And whether it's Scarborough Downs or the Cross Insurance Center or other sites that we're bringing on elsewhere in the state, this is one of the ways that we'll get a large number of folks vaccinated. It delights me to hear that your experience was so favorable. Thank you for sharing it.
Carol, thanks so much for your call. A couple similar emails coming in. I'll ask one of them, Dr. Shaw. This is from Harvey. There are 6 of us, all over 70, who want to get together around a dining room table for dinner, inside. By the middle of March, we will all have had both doses of the vaccine under our belts. Should we feel safe enough to do that? We would crack open windows a little and wear masks when not eating or drinking.
Okay, so one caveat, which is it's not so much, Harvey, that you've had your second dose. You got it. You really, in order to be fully vaccinated, in order to have the full benefits of the vaccine, it's at least 2 weeks after your second dose. So if I could add that stipulation into your hypothetical or your plan, which is that everyone waits 2 full weeks after they've gotten their second dose, then the fact is this vaccine, as I've mentioned today, is exquisitely good. We are, if anything, underselling the benefits of this vaccine. And in this situation, the situation you detailed, Harvey, provided that folks are willing to be distanced, so maybe not huddled around a tight kitchen table, but as spread out as possible, the windows are cracked open, there's ventilation happening, and folks are wearing a mask when they are not eating, then yes, I think that is the promise that we need to hold out in order to demonstrate to people that this vaccine is worth it and motivate folks to want to get vaccinated. is it something that you should do immediately? The more you can hold off, the better. If you can hold off until it warms up and you can do so outside, all the better. But that social interaction, that social contact has fallen by the wayside. So, Harvey, I don't want to necessarily give you the unqualified green light, but I do want you to know that if that's something that you and your friends, after being fully vaccinated, feel like is what you need to do to get back into the right headspace, then doing so is not the worst thing out there, and the vaccine will help keep you safe.
An email here from Deb. I'm a high school teacher who has to quarantine every time one of my nearly 100 students in one of my 8 classes test positive. Most of the teachers in my school have had to quarantine at least once since November. That means these teachers have been in quarantine, locked away from their families, wearing masks in the house, unable to go to the store, and have had to cancel doctor's appointments for 30 days since November. You can imagine the significantly negative impact it has had on teachers' lives. Considering the studies stating there is low transmission in the schools, would they consider reducing or eliminating the quarantine for teachers?
Boy, that is a great question. It's something that we have talked about and looked at some of the data around. I don't know that we're there quite yet, to be totally candid. What we've seen, thankfully, is that there have not been cases that have been detected in the nature you note, which immediately says, well, wait a minute, if there haven't been cases, then why take such a radical action? Well, one reason that there haven't been cases is because of that very aggressive action. Now, we do that recognizing that it has a very human cost associated with it, as is noted. It means multiple potential periods of quarantine. I don't know that we're quite yet ready to remove the quarantine requirement, because in some instances it may be the reason why there haven't been chains of transmission identified. But as we see more data, it's something that we are open to.
All right. I'm going to go, let's see, to Meredith, who's calling from Rockport. Hi, Meredith. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We're in Maine this year as temporary residents due to the competent handling of Dr. Shaw and Governor Mills. And we're happy to wait until all Maine residents have been vaccinated before we get in line. But do you envision a time when the vaccination supply will be robust enough that it will be extended to temporary residents?
I can't speculate directly about temporary residents because there's so many things that go behind that. But here's what I will say is I do envision a time when we are not supply constrained. That is to say, a time in which the COVID vaccine is viewed in the same way that we would view the flu shot, where supply is not the concern, and it's just as much about finding time in your own schedule to make sure you can figure out when to squeeze it in. I do envision that being the case. Indeed, the Biden administration has noted that their expectation is to have 600 million doses just by the end of June. And then on top of that, more and more doses accelerating through the end of the year, potentially aided by the approval or authorization of even more vaccines, sort of similar to what we have with the flu, where there are multiple manufacturers. So I do think we'll get to a point at which supply is not our chief constraint. And then individuals who may not be full-time residents or permanent residents, that's a time in which we think that they and others might be available for vaccine.
Meredith, thanks for your call. I'm going to move on to Freeport and Howard. Hi, Howard. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I'm a 74-year-old man, and my wife and I, as of today, are 3 weeks out from the second Pfizer vaccine. Now, we have 2 daughters and 2 grandkids in New York, and 1 daughter and 2 more grandkids in Des Moines, Iowa. And we're making tentative plans to see them, to travel to see them mid-March. But one of my daughters says, Dad, you really should wait to see how people who have had the vaccine are responding to one of the variants, how sick they actually get. They may not die, but do they get very sick? Another daughter, when I report that conversation, says, Dad, you could wait a lifetime. Who knows how many more variants are out there? So I wonder what Dr. Shaw's thoughts are about this quandary.
So am I the tiebreaker? Is that where this is going?
well, I not necessarily, but I would say that we certainly will weigh in your thoughts about this.
Well, you know, both of your kids are making good points. So here's what we know right now. The country that has had the most experience with the UK variant is the UK, and they have been vaccinating very aggressively since the vaccines first came on the market, using a slightly different vaccine, using a vaccine developed by the British manufacturer AstraZeneca, and they have continued to see what the clinical data showed, which is to say that the vaccine is exquisitely good at reducing, in fact, eliminating the need for severe hospitalizations, meaning ICUs, as well as almost virtually eliminating the risk of death. Now, that's based on the latest data from the UK. Here's the concern, though. That could change. That's just one variant. There are a number of other variants, some of which are thought to be even more aggressive than the one first characterized in the UK, some from other countries. So it is an open question. And at this time, we don't have a definitive answer to it. But based on everything we know right now, the vaccines continue to show efficacy, where efficacy is defined as reduction of severely ill hospitalizations, again, ventilators or ICUs, as well as death. The vaccines continue to show good efficacy around the variants. That is a good sign. Let's hope that doesn't change.
Howard, thanks for your call. Going to try to see if I can squeeze in one or two more calls. Casey, if you could be quick, please. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I heard one of your callers earlier talk about the struggle of getting a vaccine appointment. And I would just suggest for them finding someone to go on the internet to grab an appointment online. I've done so for my own parents who are in their 70s, as long as a few of their friends. And most recently, I found success going on the Walmart website. And at the stroke of midnight, there are a whole bunch of appointments available.
Well, Casey, thanks so much for the good tip. I really appreciate it. I'm going to go on to Mike in Gorham. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. If you could ask your question quickly, please.
Hi, Dr. Shah, a while ago, someone asked you about if someone had had the disease previously, would they only need one dose or two? Mm. There may not be a lot of evidence for that. You answered the question as if they had never had the disease at all. But I think it would be useful to know whether if someone had already had the disease, presumably it would be similar to already having the first dose.
Sure, so Mike, I'm going to have him answer. Go ahead.
Yes, Mike, you raise a good point, and it turns out a paper just came out on this topic that suggests that someone who's previously had COVID may only need the only one dose for full protection, but figuring out who's had COVID and who hasn't 1 year into a pandemic is a challenge.
All right, and I'm going to not go to this call, but one of our callers does want to ask, is it worth it to get antibody testing at this point, Dr. Shah?
No.
Okay, that's the quickest answer of the day. Nirav Shah, thank you so much for being with us. Director of Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Thank you, Dr. Shah. Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris. Visit MaineCalling.org for more information about our program and to sign up for our podcast. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, how funerals in Maine are being affected by the pandemic. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.